Hello, everyone, and welcome to the collected edition. Oh, God, really? All my dogs start to bark right now. Give me 1 second. Give me a second. Hold on.
No problem.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and joining me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Hello, everybody.
How you been, Brian?
I've been all right. Been doing okay.
Okay.
I don't have anything. I got nothing.
All right.
Life is grand.
All right. Well, that's a great way to start.
Life is grand.
Okay, well, today on the program, we'll be discussing the 2008 run of Secret Six, written by Gail Simone, with art by Nicola Scott. But before we get into that, there's something happening in the world of comics that I think we should discuss. There is. And that is that DC, in association with Warner Brothers, has announced its very own streaming service called DC Universe. This will feature all the DC properties, including the animated stuff, possibly the CW shows, that was unclear. Things like Batman 66 and Wonder Woman, those retro series, as well as original series that we'll discuss in a moment. What do you think of this, Brent?
Oh, I think it's great. I'm looking forward to it. I think that information is still a little sketchy as to what it is. I think initially, I thought, and I think others thought that it was going to, when they were kind of vaguely announcing it, that maybe it was going to be like what Marvel does with the, you know, putting the entirety of their comics online for a set fee, which I would still like them to do. But as it turns out, it looks like it's going to be more, it's just going to be TV, you know, TV content or, you know, film and.
Well, there seems to be, and again, this is the details on this are a little unclear at the moment.
Right.
But there, you know, you can pay for the streaming service, the DC version of Netflix or whatever you want to compare it to. And that would be like $7 or $8. But if you want to pay an extra fee, like a premium fee, like $15 or $20, then you also get digital downloads of comics as well.
Okay. Oh, that's excellent. I had not seen that yet.
And again, this was just rumors online of things that they're kicking around. So, no,
yeah,
that's an interesting way of doing it, so you can get your comics and your movies as well.
I mean, things seem a little vague at the moment. I think what do we do know that there are four scripted live action series. Is this, am I correct on that?
Yes. So the series will be Titans, a live action series featuring Robin, Hawk and Dove, and various members of Doom Patrol is what I've read about it.
That's
interesting. Then they're going to do a relaunch / reboot of the Young Justice animated series.
Okay.
Now, many people love that show. I personally have not seen it. So, I mean, are you familiar with the...
I am. It was fun. It was, you know, Cartoon Network fun type stuff.
Yeah, there were people who just were head over heels about that show.
Nothing wrong with it. It didn't thrill me, but it didn't bore me either, what I had watched of it. Was I not entertained? I was entertained.
Okay. The other series, Metropolis, which we actually talked about on the show once before, that would be the Lois Lane, Lex Luthor sort of detective, you know, them solving crimes before Superman showed up.
Right.
Now, apparently, this was meant to premiere already, but it's been delayed and is being retooled and reworked. Which, you know what, when I first read that, I thought, oh, this show's going to suck. But the fact that they're taking the time to say, you know what, maybe we should change it up a little bit, that actually gives me hope that they're going to make a better show and not just throw something out there.
Right. You know, if it's not ready or if you're not happy with the end product, nothing wrong with just pulling back and saying we're retooling. I also saw Harley Quinn.
Oh, there's going to be a Harley Quinn animated series. So
is that animated?
It will be animated.
Animated. Okay. Because what I saw, it just showed like four panels, and it was Young Justice, Harley Quinn, Titans, and then the show that we're probably most interested in, which we will discuss here in a moment.
We can just get right into that if you like.
Sure.
Yeah. But, well, first of all, Harley Quinn animated series, I'm not all that overwhelmed by, but I'm sure it will be fun for some.
I'll be curious to see which Harley Quinn they use, because we have like three different Harley Quinns right now in the DC universe.
If they go back to the original Harley Quinn from the Batman animated series.
The Paul Dini
version.
Yeah.
I would watch that, but I don't know. Like you said, it all depends on which Harley Quinn they decide to go with.
It's like Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy. DC just can't figure out what they want to, you know, how they want those characters to be in the comics currently, which is fine. I've never had an issue with. I'm not a big continuity whore, so it's whatever, you know. Yeah. Let the writer write with the write something interesting.
You can see I'm, you know, I'm overwhelmed by this subject. It's just they're fine for what they are. It's not my cup of tea. But what is my cup of tea is the final scripted show is a live action Swamp Thing series.
Hooray!
Hooray! Again, I've never seen the original Swamp Thing series. It ran for 12 episodes, I think.
Yeah. Well, and then there's that great movie. Remember the Swamp Thing movie?
Of course. It had Adrian Barbeau.
Woo!
My mother used to call her Adrian Bimbo. Which is awful, but kind of funny. But this looks pretty good. I mean, it's going to be produced by James Wan, who's doing the Aquaman movie, and he's got the horror chops, so maybe it'll be good.
Well, and I'm wondering, is the focus going to? We don't know much about it, right? I thought I saw somewhere where they were talking the focus maybe on Abigail Cable to start off with. Abby Arcane. Sorry.
Yeah.
Those later.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at a synopsis here. Abby Arcane returns to her childhood home in Louisiana in order to investigate a deadly swamp-borne virus, and she develops a surprising bond with scientist Alec Holland. And then Ted Salas comes. Oh no, wait, that's a different swamp creature. no, but you know, I have a particular affection for swamp-based monster.
I know you do. Well, and you know, Man Thing is your guy,
yes.
And Swamp Thing has always been my guy. Swamp Thing is one of my favorite characters. Obviously, going back to Alan Moore's great run on the series, mm-hmm. And did they get Alan Moore's permission to do this?
Do they ever?
Well, apparently, some folks believe that if you use any character that Alan Moore may or may not have created or wrote for, you have to bow before him and ask permission first.
Okay. Well, first of all, he didn't create Swamp Thing, and he had a particularly great run, but I don't think that's how it works.
Well, you'd have to talk to the Alan Moore apologists about that. No, but I'm wondering how closely they're going to follow the Swamp Thing of the comics.
Well, I mean, there's been some good runs recently too.
Yes.
So I would think that they would follow that. You know, with the green and the red and that sort of direction.
Hey, maybe we'll get an Animal Man appearance.
That would be great. Or Constantine.
Or Constantine.
You know, who's the fellow who's playing Constantine? He just wants to play that role so bad.
Yep. And he's going to continue. He's now a legend.
I know.
He is now a legend of tomorrow.
I think that's fantastic.
I think it is too, because that show... That show makes me happy every time I watch it. I'm not saying it's a great show, but yes.
Oh no, it could be argued that that's a terrible show, but I love every second of it.
Same here. I mean, it's just a hoot.
It just makes me smile, and today
I'm just going to call everything a hoot. The word for the day, kids, is hoot. Well, I believe we were talking about Swamp Thing TV series at some point.
Yeah. So I actually again. There's not a lot of details on Swamp Thing right now, but you know, I just it's so ripe for good storytelling and fun, and it could be atmospheric. And there's then the effects these days can do a swamp monster right, so he doesn't look like a guy in a rubber suit.
I hope so. That is always, I think, not just my fear, but others is tackling a character like Swamp Thing is making it look as realistic as you can while also allowing for it to be silly because we are in fantasy land, but you know, I want the show to be good.
Yeah, me too. And digital effects have reached the point, even for TV, where you can do some pretty realistic and convincing stuff. on a regular basis. So, you know, so it's ripe with possibility.
Bring in some good writers, you know, get some good scripts. Let it, I hope they let it be a horror show.
Yes, me too. Or at least keep that horror slash fantasy aspect really strong. Yeah. And don't try to make it a kind of...
Don't make it superhero-y. Don't make it, you know... Obviously, the romance aspect of Swamp Thing is very important, but it's a gothic romance as opposed to, you know, we're not talking The Flash and Iris West, Barry Allen and Iris West here. So I would like it to be, like you said, moody and sort of supernatural and definitely falling in the horror aspect.
Yeah. I like the word you use, gothic. I would love to see like that kind of gothic horror style being on top of it.
But I'm positive. I think this is a subscription service that I, once I know more, but if it's, you know, $8 a month, you know, it's...
Yeah, but see...
It's tempting.
It is tempting, but it's getting... I know that this is obviously the way of the future, and this is how our entertainment is going to be from here on out. But how many subscription services can I get now?
But if you think about it, if it's $8 a month, that's one 20-page Marvel comic. Did I say that out loud?
Hey, you know what? DC's the one that's raising their prices.
Oh, you mean they're raising their prices to be equal to that of Marvel's until Marvel raises their price to $8.99 per comic?
Wow. It's just harsh, dude.
I know, right?
But see, now having brought up Marvel, also starting is going to be the Disney streaming service, which will have all the Marvel shows, plus Star Wars, plus all the Disney accoutrement.
I'll probably subscribe to that just to watch the, you know, the entirety of the Marvel films in order.
Yeah, see, and that's kind of weird too, because Marvel now has shows on ABC, Netflix, and Hulu, because Runaways is on Hulu. So I wonder if they're going to consolidate all that stuff.
Are they going to get pulled from Netflix? Is DC going to pull? I don't think they're going to pull their shows from the CW, right?
Well, that's something that was unclear because the CW also has its own streaming service, which I think the CW is only DC properties now. I could be wrong.
Well, I mean, it's Riverdale, which is not a DC property. That's an Archie property.
True. They did branch out into Archie comics.
But, you know, what's going to happen to Gotham on Fox?
Well, especially since Disney's buying Fox.
Yeah.
So it's everything's up in the air now.
Yeah. So it will be very curious. You know, I know CBS kind of... I feel like CBS was certainly not the first, but I think it was the most telling when they did their all-access streaming where the new Star Trek was exclusively available on just there. And that suggested to me a trend that I'm not particularly thrilled about. Because as you said, there's only so many streaming services that a normal human being can subscribe to. There's only so many hours in the day to consume televised product.
Right. And that actually, the CBS thing kind of annoyed me because I don't care about anything that's on CBS except for that Star Trek series.
Right.
And I'm not going to pay for your streaming service because of one show. I'll wait for a DVD or find other outlets. I didn't say that out loud, did I?
You did. That's what the edit button is for.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, eventually we're going to have so many streaming services out there that I don't have that much money every month.
Well, and it's going to get, you're right, and it's going to get more complicated since we've lost net neutrality. The cable channels to compete with this are going to start randomly alternating their prices for things, both for internet and for televised content. So what's going to happen when you subscribe to the new DC streaming service and then your cable company or your internet provider slap on an additional charge on top of that?
Oh, you want to watch DC? Then you can only watch it at half speed.
Right. Oh, you want to pay to watch, you know, content on another platform? Well, then we're going to charge you on top of whatever the streaming service is going to charge you. Because they're not making any money, you know, off of DC streaming.
So I think that's it. We got to pack up and move to Europe.
Or Canada.
We could do that too.
Beautiful country. Nice people.
Nice people. Very polite. I know that's a stereotype, but hey, that's not a bad stereotype to have.
There are way where you could.
You're very polite and nice. So, you know, the DC streaming service, I'd like to see what it is when it's finally all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and what have you. And we see what it is. Because you know what? I would love to see all the Adam West stuff again.
I mean, stuff like that. Which I assume do we know if Warner Brothers owns that? Warner Brothers owns the original Batman?
I believe so. Or, you know what? The Batman animated series? The original? That would be great to have again at your
favorite. Yeah, who knows? It's hard to tell what is owned by who anymore. I think it seems to me that Warner Brothers has a tighter hold on the properties than Marvel and Disney
Marvel had a fire sale back in the
right night. But I don't know that for sure. I don't know that, you know, my perception is that Warner has a stronger hold on their properties, but we could be completely wrong, and there are all kinds of strays out there that are owned by separate companies.
But yeah, but overall it would be looking forward to the Swamp Thing live action stuff, and
I'm certainly willing to give the other shows a try at the very least. If I were to subscribe, I would wish to have my money's worth, and therefore will watch the other shows as well.
At least give them a shot.
Yeah, and if there's an extra charge for something that I deem to be of value, i.e., the availability of like the first 50 years of DC, like available to read, you know, online for an extra charge. Well, that would be great as well. So I think that would be appealing to me.
Yeah. So DC doesn't have like a Marvel Unlimited service?
Not really. I don't believe so. No. I think people were excited when they first saw this because they thought it was going to be something akin to that before we started getting information that it was for streaming, at, you know, live action or cartoon content.
Hmm.
So who knows? Who knows? We don't know.
That's what podcasts are for. Rampant speculation with no facts.
Yes, and we are good at that.
Absolutely. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about Secret Six.
All right.
The Swamp, more than merely a place. It is a churning, seething, bubbling bed of life of which you are a part. Once you were a man, a chemist named Ted Salas, until one little experiment went somewhat awry. And you changed. The serum that was to have made you a super soldier combined with the strange forces in the swamp to make you over into this, a shambling, mindless mockery of your former humanity. The macabre Man-Thing.
Man-Thing was created in the early 1970s to capitalize on the growing monster craze, but under writer Steve Gerber, it became something quite different. Experimental, surreal, and very, very weird. It was something I loved as a kid, but does it still hold up today, 4 decades after its initial publication? So join me, Paul Matthew Carr, as I attempt to make sense of this cult classic and analyze each issue, putting it in the context of the time it was written and comparing it to the standards of today. And maybe you, too, can come to love the world's second most famous swamp-based comic book character as much as I do. The Nexus of All Realities, a Man-Thing podcast, a twice-monthly dive into the bizarre. And we're back. Let's get into the main discussion, and Brian, this is your recommendation, so take it away.
Okay. So, Secret Six, Paul, is a comic book series originally created by E. Nelson Bridwell and Frank Springer in the 60s and revived again briefly in the late 80s before becoming another team lost to the old weird world of comics. In 2006, Gail Simone and artist Brad Walker reinvented the Six as a group of villains with a 6-issue miniseries that would pave the way for an ongoing. Picking up the masterful Nicola Scott on art duties, Simone launched the new Secret Six ongoing in 2008. An excessively violent, often filthy, and always humorous descent into twisted comics absurdity, Simone's Secret Six featured Catman, Ragdoll, Bane, Scandal Savage, and Deadshot as mercenaries for hire, utilizing the House of Secrets as their home base. The first arc, Unhinged, finds our hapless villain heroes tasked with the procurement of a mysterious item the size of a playing card. A seemingly easy task, all they have to do is break the holder of the item, Tarantula, out of Alcatraz, convince her via any means necessary to give them the item, and deliver it to their benefactor in Gotham. No problem. Except, it turns out the mysterious token is, spoiler alert, a maybe legit get-out-of-hell-free card created by Neron, and hence, many, many, many other bad-living folks would like to get their hands on the card as well, including a rather distasteful psychopath named Junior, who puts a multi-million dollar bounty on each of the six's heads and sends out what seems to be the entirety of DC's C, D, and Z-list villains in hot pursuit of our erstwhile heroes. Much excitement ensues in the subsequent heist-slash-road trip as the team journeys via a plethora of interesting vehicles, from Gotham to Alcatraz, to Petaluma, to Vegas, and back again to Gotham for an issue-long battle royale on the Gotham Bridge, leading to deaths and revelations, of course. Along the way, there are more betrayals than can be counted on two hands. A father finds a daughter, a brother finds a sister. Gallons of blood are spilled, Ragdoll makes everyone uncomfortable, and super friends for life are made, or not. The whole series is a veritable treasure trove of great characterization, superb art, running gags, meta commentary, and creative action sequences. And Unhinged is a perfect introduction to what may be one of Simone's finest works. So, Paul, I recommended this, but what did you think?
This is fantastic. As far as there's been many times when villains kind of get teamed up to, you know, to be the anti-hero group, the anti-Avengers or the anti-Justice League.
Right.
But this
Squad also
exactly, and you know, Thunderbolts for Marvel. But this is just this is how it should be.
Yes.
Because for the most part, they're D-list characters or C-list characters. With the exception of maybe Deadshot and Bane.
And Bane.
But I would even say Bane's not an A-list character.
The Batman Breaker.
But this is perfect. Simone has the exact right tone for it. They're violent, they're mean, they're nasty, they're untrustworthy, but they're also very funny, and there's some heartfelt moments to it. It's really good.
I think one of the things I like about it is this is a team not put together by a government agency forcing them to be good, like Thunderbolt and Suicide Squad. There is no payoff to them acting heroic, and they don't really. There's nothing really that they do that is heroic.
No, the idea
in the way that one would deem heroism.
Yeah,
they're not saving the world.
The only reason they seem heroic is because the people they're up against are worse than they are.
Which says a lot about the people they're up against.
Exactly.
their formation is just to commit crimes and be mercenaries and make lots of money doing bad things to what turns out to be bad people, but they're not doing it out of altruism.
Yes. Even though there is some, you know, I guess we can get into that later, but some of the characters have ideas or aspirations for better things.
Yes.
Even if that's unobtainable,
but they're unable to keep to those ideals, which is great.
No, it is. It is great. It's you almost find it very hard to root for these people because they're really quite despicable.
They're horrible, and they're horrible to each other. I mentioned in the intro, you know, the betrayals. They're all constantly betraying each other throughout the series.
Oh yeah, you know, but there is one betrayal that is altruistic in nature.
Are you talking about Deadshot?
That's Deadshot's attempt at betrayal, anyway. You
know? Well, we think, so to folks listening, not to give too much away, but, well, why not? If you're listening to this, you know we're going to give stuff away.
Yeah, just spoiling from here on out.
Yeah. So towards the end, Deadshot steals the card and beats the crap out of the rest of his teammates, steals the Get Out of Hell card, and makes a run for it. And during the trip, he's got Bane, an injured Bane in the back seat, a potentially dying Bane in the back seat, and then Tarantula, their prisoner who had the card originally. And of course, she's his prisoner, so he's got her kind of locked up. And there's a scene where I think Tarantula is trying to talk herself into believing that Floyd Lawton, aka Deadshot, is stealing the card for altruistic reasons in that he is taking the card away from his teammates so as to save them from all the people trying to kill
anyone
whoever has the card.
Right.
My take on it was that was Tarantula convincing herself of that more than that being what Deadshot was actually doing.
See, it is unclear, and it's meant to be up in the air of whether that's what he's going to be doing or not. But he's the kind of character who would do that sort of thing.
Possibly. Yeah. What's great is different readings of characters and the richness of Simone's writing these characters is that we could come to two separate conclusions about his motivations, and both of us could justify it by various actions that the character does.
Exactly. There's enough ambiguity there that you could go either way. And that's good. I don't want to know. I don't need to have it spelled out for me and I don't need to have a definitive answer. I think the story, not just that aspect, but the entire run works because we don't really know what their real motivations are at any given moment.
Yeah.
And that's what
makes I think they change at every given moment because these are people who are not, who are generally amoral, if not outright bad guys. They are certainly amoral. With, as you mentioned, there are two exceptions that I would allow for, which one is, and you referenced that a few minutes ago, Catman, who may be having aspirations to be towards becoming a better person.
Yes, but
bad thing that happened in Africa.
Right.
And also he's Stuppenhuntress.
Sounds like a German term.
Yeah.
But, with only one exception, the team, Savage, she's horrible, but she has a code that she follows. And the same with Deadshot. Catman, aside from a really ridiculous name, has, like you said, aspirations of being a better person.
But he fails miserably every time he tries, to the point where Deadshot has to remind him that he left two innocent people behind to be killed. There's a scene where he attempts to rescue some folks or stop a robbery in a convenience store,
and that right there is a bit of comedy as well.
Right. I mean, you got the buddy, they're the bad buddy cop duo, Deadshot and Catman, and that continues throughout the entire series, is them playing off each other as besties who aren't really besties.
But as far as Simone's writing, that scene really highlights it because there's a robbery taking place in this convenience store and Catman and Deadshot are having a conversation and they don't stop having that conversation even with everything going on around them and there's guns pointed at their heads and they're just ignoring it the whole time because they know these are amateurs. it's beautifully written and it's wonderfully paced. It's a really great cinematic scene.
Yeah.
And it's really funny.
But Catman doesn't even think about the fact that once they stop it, they leave the robbers behind with the innocent people. And Deadshot has to point out to Catman, he's like, oh, so, you want to join the Justice League, do you? Well, you do realize you just left two innocent people behind with a group of very angry people who are probably going to kill them. And so Catman has to go back in and fix that.
Yeah.
And the other potential good guy or the one who is trying to reform is Bane.
Yes. His attempts at reformation are clumsy, let's say.
At best.
The only really unredeemable character is Ragdoll, who's just creepy and bizarre.
Yeah, Ragdoll's just wrong.
Yeah.
But he's also, he is my favorite character.
He's definitely interesting.
Ragdoll has no moral code. I mean, it's like amoral, positive moral, evil moral. There is no moral.
Yeah, how would you, Dungeons and Dragons turn? Would he be chaotic evil?
Yeah. Sure. But yet, he's also the most charming of them.
Yeah,
He speaks in very polite terms to people, even when he's describing some of the most horrific sexual and violent acts that he has an interest in.
Yes, and even Deadshot has to keep telling him, all right, stop. We don't need to know this. Just stop.
Stop telling us these things.
Yes.
It's also fitting that we end up finding out is a relative of Ragdoll.
Okay, now you can disagree with me on this. I was actually disappointed by that reveal. I wanted Junior to be something completely different. And then when you find out, oh, sister, you know.
So Junior, it turns out, Junior is one of the most horrific characters I've read in comics.
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
And, of course, you never see Junior's face or body. There's a lot of repetition about Junior does not want to be seen. Junior lives in a crate and actually has people thrown into the crate with Junior for Junior to do horrific things with, which may or may not involve also eating them. of course, Junior's two flunkies, Tig and Aaron, who are conjoined twins who have been separated, one of whom talks often about their therapist.
Yeah, it's incredibly disturbing, that whole aspect of it.
So Junior wants this get out of jail or get out of hell card. Everybody wants this get out of hell card. But Junior in particular, I believe, has enough horrible things in Junior's life that Junior really, really, really wants this get out of hell card.
Right. Now that aspect, okay, I didn't explain it. I thought that the making her and Ragdoll siblings seemed a little convenient. That's why I was disappointed by it.
Okay.
That being said, the idea that, and it's a little unclear in this arc, but she apparently mutilated herself.
Well, as did Ragdoll to himself. Right.
To appease their father, who was the original Ragdoll.
The original Ragdoll, yeah.
And so that
in and of itself. Who are we given to believe was rather quite horrible to his children.
Yes. Yeah. So we believe that Junior Alex is her name.
Right.
So we're given to believe that she was actually quite beautiful and outwardly beautiful, but wanted to make herself ugly or make her outward appearance what she felt inside, which is really disturbing. And then add on top of that the religious aspect that she's incredibly religious Catholic. All the horrible, terrible things that she has done, she knows she's going to have to pay for.
Well, that great scene where she visits the priest and she wants to be absolved, but she doesn't want to repent. You know, and the priest is like, "You have to stop doing these things," and she's like, "No,
no, I don't repent.
So I shall not."
You can't have absolution if you don't repent. That's kind of the deal. Yeah. So this is a character who is afraid of her punishment, but unwilling to do anything to forestall that punishment. Well, and those aspects of the character are really intriguing and just really, like I said, disturbing and wonderful as far as a villain is concerned. But I don't think she needed to be Ragdoll's sister. That just seemed convenient. It was like, it was almost as if they just needed that one little tweak, but the reveal was, you know, Bane is being tortured. Yeah. The reveal was just, "Hey sis, really? That's it." Anyway, I mean, and that's a small quibble, I think. Yeah. Overall, this is really good stuff.
I think it calls into the whole thing calls into question. I mean, the concept of, I've said morality a few times, but you know, Junior sends out all these other villains to capture the card, and I think from the get-go, as soon as we find out what the card is the realization that Junior's never going to get her hands on that card without killing every D-list villain in DC Comics. Because, you know, the question about the card is the card legit? Is it real or not? And several of the characters have different conversations at various times where essentially the end result of the conversation is, does it matter if it's legitimate or not? And they talk about, you know, it's all about hope.
Yeah.
And it's desire.
It's worth a shot.
Desire, yeah, for the card to be real. Like, the card exists. It's an actual card. It's a real thing that the six are carrying around with them that they get from Tarantula. But whether that card does get you out of hell.
Well, and it's a wonderful idea that the devil would create this one card.
Right.
So that everybody else will kill each other to attain that one card. So, right. It's, you know, it's quite a dastardly plan.
Yeah. Well, they even talk about it's like, you know, why would the devil create a thing that hurts only one person when they could create a thing that hurts many people? You know, if the card were not legit, then the person holding it would be the only one affected by it when they find out they don't get out of jail for free. Whereas out of jail, I keep saying out of jail, out of hell for free. Whereas
that's a form of jail.
Yeah. It's, yeah. The hope that it is legit hurts way more, hurts many more people.
Oh, right. And just, it exposes the baser nature of those people trying to get the card.
Well, it's the idea that people, that everybody will do the even more horrible things than usual for the right to be forgiven for the horrible things they're doing.
And thus condemning themselves even more.
Yes.
It's really a beautiful plan, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, I mean, this story has layer upon layer upon layer of really good stuff.
But it's also just fun comics.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's where the humor comes in. Because we, basically right now we've been focusing on a lot of the darker elements. But that darkness is alleviated immensely by the really funny stuff that's going on. You know, the banter of the characters, just the situations that they get into.
Oh, yeah, the fact that, you know, they're modes of transportation, you know. It's an ice cream truck. It's they at some point they have to ride horses to get from one place to another.
That was fantastic, by the way. Having their car destroyed and then they all ride horses into town. Ah, that's great.
And they send Ragdoll out to get an inconspicuous vehicle, so of course he returns with an ice cream truck.
So they can have snacks on their trip.
And, you know, I mean, that's and throughout their entire road trip, because at the end of the day, this is a road trip comic.
Yeah,
or this first arc is basically just a road trip. You know, there's that great splash panel that the brilliant Nicola Scott does.
Yes.
Of them, like, their trip from Vegas back to Gotham after they've gotten the card. And it's this spread of all the different vehicles that they take throughout that road trip, because who knows what happens to each vehicle, but obviously they get destroyed every like 10 miles.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, there's I'm forgetting the name of the character. Jeanette.
Right, Jeanette, yeah. Who is going to become the sixth, because Knockout, Vandal Savage's girlfriend, who was part of the original Secret Six before she was killed. So they were actually down to five people through most of this first arc. And Jeanette is the character who will become the sixth of the Secret Six.
Yes, who is a literal banshee.
Yes.
But at one point they're riding in just a beat up old car. And she says, no, this will not do. And that's when they get the huge stretch limousine
right.
for their fighter trip. But that's what, you know, and again, it's the humorous situations that they keep finding themselves into and how the characters react to one another in these strange situations. That's what makes this really unique and something that makes it stand out more than what you see in other comics of this sort.
Well, and even the banter between Tig and Aaron, the formerly conjoined twins,
yeah,
they have great lines. And I suppose... there's so many moments of humor in it, but I think one of my favorites, and I think maybe one of yours too, is Bane's relationship to Scandal Savage.
Yes, absolutely. So Bane is trying to be the de facto daddy to Savage, and he's, as we talked about earlier, a little awkward.
Oh, yeah.
He's trying so, I mean, he's so sincere, though.
It's wonderfully creepy, because Bane he's given up Venom, so he is no longer as superpowered as he had been. So he is trying throughout, he's trying to be the, again, we'll go back to the moral compass, which I keep referring to. He's trying to be, he's the one guy who's trying to be the good guy even more than Blake, even more than Catman. And in doing so, he sets himself up as a father figure to Scandal.
Who has no idea or desire for such a thing to happen.
I don't think she gets it at first.
No, she does not.
He doesn't realize what he's doing. You know, when she's vomiting and he's in there trying to, you know, he's like, too much vomit.
And the fact that when they're on the ice cream truck and he tells her she can only have one flavor and that's it.
and she's like, what?
What are you talking about?
Well, and earlier, one of my favorites is when she's driving one of the getaway cars and he's talking to some of the other guys in the back. And he says that what she really needs is the firm and loving hand of a father. And I think Deadshot also does a, you know, it's like, man, you're f***ed up.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can believe that.
Okay.
But that is simultaneously really sweet and unbearably creepy.
Yeah,
Bane is great. I love the fact that he's just trying to be a dad in the worst way possible.
Simone just completely reinvents him.
Yes.
His character, you know, for the Secret Six, which is a lot of fun. It's also slightly tragic because in the end, in order to save Scandal, he finally gives in and takes the Venom and does it only so he can save his
pseudo-daughter. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? There are moments, even as creepy and as bizarre as they are, there's really heartfelt moments. You know, there's actual little glimpses of tenderness between these people, even when they're being despicable to each other. And that's, you know, that's a very fine line to walk. And Simone does a wonderful job of presenting that.
So one of the other kind of great scenes in the series or in this particular arc that I loved was when early on when Catman goes to Gotham to distract Batman while the rest of the group is breaking into Alcatraz to free up Tarantula. And it's Batman being at his most dickishly serious and Catman basically goading him the whole time. Well, particularly with the, I smell cumin. I smell pork. Is someone cooking something around here? You know?
Yeah. Is there a Mexican restaurant around here? And that was really great, actually. He just kept throwing out those little those little digs at Batman.
And finally, towards the end of their interaction, Batman's finally like, I had a burrito, okay? I had a burrito. And the fact that we get Batman basically having to shout, I had a burrito. You know, it's not exactly at the level of I'm the goddamn Batman, but it may be better.
Yes, that is a really good scene. And I do like the fact that when it's all said and done, Batman wins the battle.
Yes.
Or the fight. But Catman gets up and says, okay, I've distracted you long enough. My team's either dead or done. By the way, I would have won. I just let you win. And then he takes off. I think that every Batman villain should do that. I just let you win.
But it's just another of what I think are, you know, we're just scratching the surface of some of the great scenes that Simone has written in just this arc alone and the great characterization that she has done. And
well, the running gags in it, like the fact that Catman is a very stupid name for a villain and everybody takes the piss out of him.
But he used to be a very stupid villain.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
He was a joke. And now he is, you know, he was a big guy. Like he was chubby and, you know, useless. And now he has reinvented himself into a world-class fighter.
And psychopath.
And psychopath.
Yeah, so he does horrible. We only get a few backstories in this particular arc, one of which being Catman's indiscretions.
Adventure in Africa.
His indiscretions in Africa, yeah. which are horrific. Although, you know,
in some ways justified.
Like, well, yeah. Yeah.
I don't feel bad for the people who were affected by Catman's indiscretions in Africa.
By what Catman do?
Have you been waiting for that?
No, it just came to me. That was great. Yeah. So we got a little bit of what Jeanette's backstory is. So I did not look this up, so I apologize if I sound ignorant. Was she an original character for this run?
I believe so. I did not look it up as well, but I had not encountered her before this. I had worked on the assumption that she was an original creation. Our intrepid listeners can correct us if we're wrong. Of course, the Google can as well, but I refuse to Google in the midst of...
Well, you won't Google
in the midst
during
of being potentially wrong.
Yeah, we don't Google during a podcast because that's great listening right there. People giggling.
Yes.
Yeah, but I like her.
Oh yeah,
quite a bit. Just the way she acts in her casino, she just takes no guff from anyone. There's a hell of a lot of minor bad guys in this.
Yes.
Do you think they just went through the handbook and just started picking out everyone? All right, that one's good. That one's good. That one's good.
I think they are all existing. Again, read through it. I mean, some of them we obviously know. Like you get Cheetah, and who is not? She's one of the few non CD list villains that are used in this. and I couldn't name all the characters because there's a lot. I mean,
you just reminded me though of one of my favorite moments in this is when they're fighting Cheetah, and then who was it that comes in? Electro. It's not Electro. The electric guy.
Yeah, the electric guy. I think that's his villain name. We're going with the electric guy.
So the Electro knockoff comes in and says, "Who's got the card?" Deadshotting Catman both at the same time go, "Cheetah's got it." And they go after each other.
And that's how they make their escape.
Exactly. And I was just like, oh, that was such a great punchline. The way it's done, and props to Nicola Scott for pacing this perfectly. The question is asked, they look at each other, and then they both look at and say that line at the same time. Really, really well done.
Well, and I think props have to be given to Nicola Scott in general. Yeah. She has been one of the best artists in comics for the last 20-plus years. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, she's great. I mean, there's so many, like you said, there's so many group shots of these minor villains, and they're all given their own personality. They're all, you know, they're not just shapes in the background. She gives each one a distinct personality, and you know who it is.
Yeah. And I think she works so well with certain writers. I mean, she's definitely has a great relationship now with Greg Rucka in Black Magic, and also her run on Wonder Woman. But you really see her shine when you get like good writing. Not that, you know, she could illustrate anything and make it good. But when Simone has given Scott so much material to work with, and Scott just took it and ran. The visuals in this, the body work, even the action sequence, she draws action sequences as great as she draws interpersonal sequences. And not every artist can do that. And she imbues each character with such a unique appearance. And like you said, you know, she draws these huge panels where there's, you know, 50 people in the panel, and every character looks different.
Right. And they all have their own, they have their own expression. They have their own personality. You can tell who these, not just who the character is, but who they are by the way that she draws them. Yeah. It's fantastic. And I love the fact that she can do action incredibly well, but I think the true test of a great artist is to make a quiet scene compelling.
Right,
because there's a lot of talking going on in this.
There is a lot of talking. Some of it's, you know, the humorous variety, but some of it is of a more menacing variety as well.
But you never think that the visuals are just taking a panel off to focus on the dialogue. There's always something to visually hold your attention. There's always something dynamic going on, even if it's just two people talking to each other. And that's you know, like I said, that's the mark of a great artist to me. And you're right. I mean, we've talked about that many times on this show, that when you get the right artist and the right writer.
The right writer.
Yeah, when you get a good writer and a great artist working together in sync, that's what makes comics great. You know, that's what makes this medium shine and makes it so unique. And we're definitely seeing it here in this comic because Scott and Simone just work perfectly together.
Yeah, and I think it's the two of them. The comic would have been good if Simone had written it and a different artist was on it. The comic book would have been good if it was a different writer writing in a similar vein and Nicola Scott was doing the art. But the two together, I think, is what makes. I think this run is kind of a classic. I know we jokingly say the classic and not so classic, or infamous and not so infamous runs.
Right.
But I really think that this brief run that they did, it only lasted 30 some issues.
That's a good run these days.
Yeah.
If you can make it past 25 issues, you did something good.
Yeah. I don't think that the comic was relaunched again in the New 52, and it's okay, but I felt like the relaunch of it, again with Gail Simone writing, I didn't feel like it had the same value. It didn't entertain me near as much as this original run.
I can't speak to that. I have not read the New 52 version. All I know is this initial run, and this was fantastic. This was one of those highlights. And again, this is not a Marvel versus DC, but I tend to read more Marvel than I do DC, or at least that used to be the case. It's not something that much anymore. But at this time, when something was really outstanding, that's what I would focus on and pick up from DC. And this was one of those runs.
And it also features one of the great lines ever in comics. You hit me in the ornament things.
Was that Mammoth?
Yes, that was Mammoth. As someone kicked him in his special place, and he declares, you hit me in the ornament things. And I think if there's one thing a person can take from Secret Six, I think you hit me in the ornament things should be amongst the top. So, Paul, I think there are a million more things we could talk about with this comic, but I also feel that this would be a good point to talk about what's coming up next. Do you have more you wish to add before we do that?
Well, my final thoughts on this is just to recap. This to me is one of, if not the best, maybe, of the villains turned into anti-hero teams, because there's many variations on that theme. This one just hits every note perfectly, and Gail Simone's writing makes this dark, often violent premise, and takes it and elevates it by adding humor and heart. This is just a very entertaining comic that proves bad guys can be great, even if they're horrible while doing it.
Yes, bad guys can be great even when they're still just being bad guys.
Exactly. So that's it. Thank you for recommending this, Brian. It was great to revisit this.
I was happy. Yeah, and it was also the chance to revisit the series because I hadn't read it in a while either. Okay. So I was happy to be reminded of how great it was.
Okay, well, next time on an all-new episode of the Collected Edition, we'll be discussing Rock Candy Mountain by Kyle Starks, published by Image Comics. This is the manic post-World War II era romp that features hobo fights. Just so many hobo fights.
Does anybody get hit in the ornament things?
Oh, multiple times. They get hit in their bindles as well.
Wow.
And it also features the devil. Yes, the actual devil. So hobos and the devil, you really can't go wrong.
You cannot.
I will be recommending volumes 1 and 2. This collects the full 8 issues of the run of Rock Candy Mountain, and it's just a fun romp, as I said.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to reading it and talking about it.
Okay, great. So you haven't read this yet?
I have not. I will begin reading it probably in the next hour or so.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, so that's fun. I like to have new things thrust upon us. So I guess that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, we value your feedback, and you can leave comments on individual episodes on our website, collectededitionpodcast.com. Send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com, or hit us up on Twitter @collectededpod. That's collected, E-D-P-O-D. And if you're also so inclined, leave us a review on iTunes, because it really does help us get found, and it helps out the show quite a bit. Anything else to add, Brian?
You hit me in the ornament things.
There you go. Well, that's it. Again, thanks for listening, and until next time, keep reading comics.
Be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter @collectededpod. That's collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Oh, that's what we didn't talk about on the podcast, is I wanted to talk, it's too late now, I'm not going to worry about it, but I wanted to clarify that how bizarre Secret Six was to have been published by DC proper as a regular newsstand comic.
And not
without the T plus or anything.
Yeah. You know, that would have, this was ripe for Vertigo.
Yeah.